Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is L.A. Steele. And tonight we're going to continue the reading of my book, Naked at the Mic, The Survival of a Liberal in a Time of Peril. And tonight we're going to read Chapter 7, which is Jesus was a Liberal. And as you, some of you may know that as you, if you've been following the book, we are been trying to make a statement, sorts, as I wrote this book, the statement being that the book actually started out as a defense of liberalism. And progressed further from a defense of liberalism to an actual, an actual statement of what liberalism is, and it maintains its defense. However, I wanted people to understand that I believe liberalism needed a defense. I believe it has been terribly maligned over the many years as a philosophy and as a way of life and as a an ideal. And from that standpoint, I felt it was important to make that stand and make that statement and put it in writing, how I felt and how many others feel regarding their beliefs as a liberal, and also what has been termed conservative thought thinking, how that has been such a people don't even realize what conservative thinking is. I mean, this is a doesn't make sense anymore. And I've spoken to probably the most arch conservative group in the country, the John Birch Society. I found that even though they are considered conservative, we have a lot more in common as a liberal with them than I do with the run-of-the-mill fundamentalist crazy conservatives, you know, the Hannity, the Fox News conservatives, you know, which is just really, really bizarre mindset, and or I find it to be. But anyway, tonight we're going to I'm going to start with Chapter 7. Jesus was a liberal. The radical liberal individual is merely a man or woman who has found peace within themselves and pursues an inner force or drummer, as Thoreau stated. In this state of mind, one always runs into conflict, controversy, or confrontation. It's part of the package. A radical is like a fish swimming upstream against the current toward his destiny. He doesn't really know why. We really don't know why we have to do it. We just have to do it. Our instincts and convictions make us fight the current. When something is terribly wrong around us, we are not able to keep quiet or let it happen and continue without a fight. It is the way we are. Radicals have been associated with the left of center ideologies and reactionaries associated with the right. We are basically the same except pitted against each other by ideologies. And the radical insists on moving forward, while the reactionary insists on moving backwards. The biggest lie the right has used to their great advantage is their self-righteous claim to high moral values, as validated by their literal misinterpretation of the Bible. How dare we attack the Word of God? Conservatives forget that the words they consider sacred are not necessarily the words of God, but the multiple translations and often mistranslated words of men that have deliberately edited, eliminated, misinterpreted, and manufactured the words of God's prophets. God, according to Bible scholars, never personally wrote anything down. He never, according to the Bible, instructed anyone but Moses to write down the Ten Commandments, of which Moses later shattered in anger at the Israelites once he descended the mountain, after many days of communicating with God through a burning bush. The King James Version of the Bible was interpreted by Francis Bacon and other known Masons. Bacon was the founder of the Rosicrucians. King James was considered by many of the Christian world during this period, or during this time, as a pervert and a known believer in paganism. The King James Bible was considered a deliberate misinterpretation of the ancient texts, promoted by the English king to confuse the English-speaking world of its true content. And the first Puritans carried the Geneva Bible with them. David Bay, founder of Cutting Edge Ministries and CuttingEdge.org, created a fascinating documentary entitled The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings. He is also one of the few individuals in the world that has a printed copy made from the original King James Bible. In an illuminating discussion with David Bay, he stated on my show that the original edition of the King James Bible was decorated in pagan symbolism. He stated illustrations of pagan gods and goddesses, dragons and mythological demons and symbols were prominently displayed on the cover and throughout the book. The original texts were transcribed and translated by the early Roman Church, and the collection of works was edited, sorted, and translated from ancient Arabic into Latin, supposedly by a French monk, Saint Jerome, in a monastery in France. The Catholic text was first printed in Germany in 1455. This first printing made the Bible available to scholars and the public for the first time. This revolutionary publication and Martin Luther's protest unleashed the Protestant Reformation. Religious scholars are well aware that the New Testament was not written or recorded by Jesus' immediate disciples, but in all instances they were transcribed some 50 to 75 years after the death of Jesus and many years after the death of his disciples. The stories of Jesus were considered passed down orally by his followers and memorized for fear that written mentions of Jesus and the original disciples, if found in the possession of early Christians, would be too dangerous, because the Romans and Jews still persecuted the early Christians for 3 centuries after the death of Christ. The greatest story ever told is without doubt the story told by the conservative Christian right regarding the moral mandates they try to impose on the American people and the rest of the world using the authority of the Judeo-Christian Bible. This is not to say that any or all of the Christian or Judaic Bibles are false or fabricated, but it does give a learned and open-minded person pause to think for a moment about the many other authenticated texts of all the other world religions. The words of Abraham were not written by Abraham. The Quran was not written by Muhammad. And the teachings of Jesus were not written by Jesus, nor were the lessons of Socrates written by Socrates. All that is known of these men was described and transcribed by their followers, students, and disciples. If a disciple decided to deify his or her teacher or wishes to create their own following or cult, they will create a godly connection to their master in glorious tales. The wisdom and truth bestowed on these inspired writings of parables or direct dialogue and teachings of the masters are considered the mark of authenticity bestowed upon these works. That authenticity of human and divine wisdom and prophecy are woven through all sacred texts, and they are honored and revered by each follower of that religion as the word of God. remarkable book entitled The Secret Scriptures, written by Dr. Kasim Khalil and published by Knowledge House Publishers, has brought to the public attention the censored scriptures of one of Jesus' most devout disciples, Barnabas. The scriptures of Barnabas were hidden since the 5th century of the Catholic Church in the Pope's private library. Barnabas was the only disciple who was verified to have lived during the period or during the time of Jesus, and was instructed by Jesus to be his scribe and record his teachings. It is well known amongst religious scholars that the Gospel of the Christian Bible were not the Gospels, rather, of the Christian Bible were not written by those disciples who have been credited for them. It has been well documented by numerous biblical scholars that over 400 authors have contributed to the collection of works known as the Bible, which includes both Old and New Testaments. The scriptures of Barnabas described a completely different Jesus than does the New Testament, which was revived and edited numerous times by the Catholic Church and many other Christian religions. Barnabas describes Jesus as a man, not a god, and states that Jesus often reprimanded all of his disciples for claiming him as divine. The teaching and life of Jesus, according to the scriptures of Barnabas, were extremely radical for their time. Nothing about Jesus describes him as a conservative or a reactionary. Jesus was an extreme social and religious radical. His life and works created a 2,000-year worldwide revolution that caused the eventual destruction of the Roman Empire and spread the Christian revolution to every country and continent. Jesus was a liberal. Jesus was an extreme radical, as were all of his followers. Any past or present moral leader of historical significance has pronounced their devotion to non-violent teachings of Jesus and to the liberal ideology that mankind is inherently good, and the virtues of peace, love, truth, and freedom and justice are the pillars of human existence. The spiritual and social ideals of conservative and reactionary ideologues are diametrically opposed to the true teachings of Jesus. Jesus was a liberal. People gathered together as nations or religions do not have the right to inflict by violence and enslavement their religions on others. No one has that right given to them by any holy text unless their text has been mistranslated or is a text of an evil or satanic cult designed to harm an individual or degrade, rape, and murder an infidel or pagan or Gentile or Jew. If anything is true, peace and love for fellow men are the marks and characteristics of God. Any people who go to war except in self-defense from attack or invasion are morally wrong. War is a barbaric belief of uncivilized and ignorant human beings. The destruction and murder of another race, culture, or society to acquire by force their resources or wealth, or to annihilate a people from the face of the earth because of violent hatred, racial hatred, is morally wrong when considered for use in any measure by enlightened human intelligence. All true men and women of God and conscience are radicals. Jesus was a radical. Moses was a radical. Buddha was a radical. Muhammad was a radical. Martin Luther was a radical. And Martin Luther King Jr. was a radical. Mahatma Gandhi was a radical. Every progressive leader has been and is a radical. Every fundamentalist of any religion is a reactionary. Anyone who believes that their sacred text is the absolute truth as it is written is a complete fool. Anyone who uses methods of violence, guilt, sanctions, ignorance or malice inflicts wounds or oppresses others to accept their will or faith over their own is morally and reprehensibly wrong. If God created man, then he created all men. He created everyone. If God chose to speak with men, then he would communicate any way he wanted to. Why does an English-speaking person think God would only speak English? Why does a white man think God has to be white and force the rest of the world to think that way as well? Could it be for his own supremacy over others and have nothing to do with God? Why does a church or mosque or synagogue have to be this absolute chosen sacred ground sanctioned by God? Didn't God and Jesus and Muhammad and every prophet roam the desert or were expelled from somewhere and never allowed a real home to call their own? Christ supposedly said to Peter, "You are the rock I build my church upon." Isn't the basic teaching of all religions based upon the true believer living in their faith with what little or with little want for violence or material gain? Religious arrogance and intolerances is an evil far greater than any other. It has caused more deaths, more separations, more conflict and division than any other cause of hatred known to mankind. The unholy throne of Satan is adorned with the many symbols of man's religions. One God, one good, one evil. There is nothing more simple to understand. Why the savage soul of a man remains savage is because of its intolerance of others. Once man accepts the reality that God is all of his creation, war and conflict will end. With Jesus or Muhammad or Buddha or Socrates or Krishna argue over an individual having love, mercy, and compassion for another? I think not. That is God's message, and that concept is considered radical today. Nazla, do you please refer to my essay, The Radical Soul, in section 2 of this book, which is Essays and Insights, in the metaphysical section of the book. There's 6 segments to my essays in section 2 of this book, it's divided into national politics, international politics, satire, mainstream media, patriotism, and metaphysics, which is the last segment. And you can go to The Radical Soul in that segment of the book when it comes out. that went a little faster than I thought it was going to. Perhaps these chapters are a little shorter. But I believe that pretty self-explanatory that Jesus was a liberal. There's no question about that if you look at it from a philosophical standpoint, especially since a liberal means that a liberal believes in the good of men, whereas a conservative believes in the worst of men, the evil of men. These are the exact definitions from Webster's Encyclopedia, unabridged Encyclopedia, actually. I believe I have to, while I have the advantage of doing this reading of the book, I might be able to clarify it a little bit better and add some comments to the text. But my next chapter, which I really didn't expect to get into as quickly tonight, chapter 8. Is entitled The Blue Collar Republicans. Blue Collar Republicans. To me, the blue collar Republican has always been an enigma. It's always been a strange part of our society, an extremely vocal part of our society, and essentially the base of the Republican Party. The reactionary base, the static base. And if you look at the lives of blue collar Republicans, you understand how they're stuck in the mud, if you will, afraid to move forward. it pretty much explains this in this chapter. But again, I was stunned by I've always been stunned by this group of American people and this strata of American society, which bridges between the working poor and poor, working poor, and actually middle class, lower middle class, and middle. And the Republican Party is actually separated into two segments, one being the blue-collar Republicans and the others being the elite Republicans, the big businessmen, the GOP, grand old party. The separation there is one of incredible manipulation, more so than in the Democratic Party and the more liberal elements of their society, in the sense that don't get me wrong, liberalism, or the word liberal, has been hijacked by the conservative right wing ideologues and pundits, and for no reason, actually, and for no good reason other than just to condemn anyone who believes in the goodness of man. But about it. And believes in compassion, mercy, honor, integrity, education, knowledge, the value of knowledge. These are all embraced by liberal people. And for that, you have this diametrically opposed group of people from the rest of society, which are basically the blue-collar Republicans. And I'm going to begin reading this, and it's hopefully clear of my thinking here, and possibly answer some questions that you might have as well about this group of individuals in our society. Life is a mystery filled with countless conspiracies. Every child, once he or she reaches a certain age, can discern the difference between a lie and the truth. From that time onward, for the remainder of their life, he or she will continually struggle to identify a lie from the truth. It is a highly developed instinctual defense for self-survival in most human beings. The great concern that faces any society is the value that society places on truth. When a government's leaders are noted liars or criminals, or both, then we have to look closer at what in that society allows and condones this type of activity. It has always amazed me that the loudest opponents to any accusations of conspiracy are conservatives, and 90% of the time, they are the conspirators. Every Republican administration in U.S. history has been embroiled in corruption or conspiracy scandals. Perhaps a liberal like myself has a less nurturing or less trusting view of his government than do conservatives. But only a complete fool would totally believe that what any governmental official tells them, especially if they have any knowledge of history. People who believe their government is infallible and their leaders are omnipotent or absolute descendants from Christ or Muhammad are ridiculous. Even the common dog and cat know when they are being deceived, abused, or mistreated by their owners. The most remarkable sector of American society is the blue-collar Republican. This significantly expanding segment of American society is worthy of a chapter, a self-evident proof of the existence of conspiracies and the reasons that conspiracies are ignored are so self-righteously opposed. I am not criticizing all blue-collar workers. Many of them are liberal, and many are highly intelligent and involved citizens. However, the blue-collar Republican is beyond my comprehension. There are three players in all conspiracies. The first player is the conspirator. The second player is the investigator, who believes there is a conspiracy and wants to expose it. And the third player is the victim or victims of the conspirators, who must decide if they are being deceived and will be the juror or jury who ultimately decides the guilt or innocence of the conspirator and the appropriate penalty. This is a classic trinity in courtrooms: the defendant, plaintiff, and jury. The judge is the game referee. Attorneys are expert gamesmen. Every legal system in the world is comprised of the same for the same reason, that is to defend the innocent and find the guilty. Any guilty person or company or of our government has committed a conspiracy to defraud or harm someone. Any guilty person, company, or government has committed a conspiracy to defraud or harm someone. A co-worker conspires with another co-worker to get someone fired or demoted or to be promoted. Union or contract negotiations are designed to bargain with conspirators from both sides of the negotiation table, either side setting out a plan or strategy to win certain objectives against each other that were first decided and agreed to in private talks and meetings to organize and confirm a negotiating settlement, or strategy, rather. Diplomats from all nations do the same. Do the same thing before entering treaty talks or any diplomatic mission. Businesses plot against their competitors and against the consumer they wish to trick or treat into buying their product or ware or service. The reason I criticize the and consider the blue-collar Republican is because for some reason, not fully understandable to me, a blue-collar Republican will always side against his or her best interests and always defend the most callous and belligerent actions taken by their government or company. They are the first in the United States to enlist in the military, the first in their company to go against their own union, the first to defend their religious upbringing, the first to tune in Desperate Housewives, World Wrestling Federation and Fox News, and the blue-collar comedy show, and the first to condemn government-run health care, though he or she may be uninsured or already have Medicare or collecting disability or unemployment benefits. The blue-collar comedy show, produced by Fox, is comprised of four comedians who change from their regular street clothing into blue-collar costumes to viciously satirize the blue-collar Republican culture. Fox News and associates are ultra-conservative Republican Party mouthpieces. The World Wrestling Federation is the most bloodthirsty sporting event on television, and like all the others aforementioned programs, is a satirical play of outrageous violence and legalized criminal insanity. These are the mainstays of blue-collar Republicans, news and entertainment. The blue-collar conservative culture supports with their diminishing dollar all the fast food franchises, all the beer company advertising, and buys and believes in every GM and Ford truck that was ever built. They buy the vast majority of American SUVs with the optional gun rack and four-wheel drive heavy-duty action option packages. They are the stamp for approval, all-American blue-collar Republican man and woman. Generally, they have a high school diploma or less education. A factory employed industrial workers, farm workers, cowboys, army or marine PFCs. These are the men and women that accept their place in life and knowingly work unprotected with cancer-causing chemicals, knowingly destroy the environment by illegally dumping waste materials and chemicals, and by gas-guzzling vehicles. They are the self-proclaimed expendable American military who volunteer for chemical weapons tests and accept without complaint or protest being used as guinea pigs for untested vaccines or new weaponry. These are the men and women who serve their country right or wrong, dead or alive, and never ask why. They are those who Henry Kissinger calls cannon fodder. They follow orders questionably from their supervisors, officers, senators, congressmen, president, fast food restaurant order takers to supersize. These are the believers in the corrupt two-party system, the Catholic Church that molests their children, and the Protestant Church that asks for 10% of their income. These are the mindless, fearful worker bees of our society that are the first to die, first to be experimented on, the first to join the military and never question the reason for their government's actions. These are the same people who so vehemently oppose any mention of conspiracy or proof of conspiracy because they are the true believers in the KKK, G.W. Bush, nuclear energy is safe. To them, ignorance is bliss. To all blue-collar Republicans, ignorance is a deliberate and desperate act of denial. This is why elite Republicans and the Republican Party can so easily manipulate them. The conservative intellectual is another wonder of nature. The term conservative intellectual is an oxymoron. The belief system of these individuals is most disturbing and frightening to a liberal-minded individual or any open-minded individual. For any liberal or open-minded individual to listen to a conservative pundit, to listen to conservative pundits on radio or television, or read conservative diatribes and newspaper columns is a true testament to their tolerance. The most disturbing conservative pundits are those who have national or statewide prominence and are promoted ceaselessly by their corporate sponsors. Money is too often controlled by conservative concerns, who are motivated by greed and self-interest. They maintain and defend the multi-million dollar incomes of national radio and television conservative talk show hosts who hawk their products and ignore or defend corporate and government crimes. This is the obvious reason for the unrelenting belligerence and absurd, hate-driven pugnacity of conservative pundits and talk radio hosts. When they are confronted by a liberal guest or a liberal concept that threatens to reveal the host or pundit's bias or ignorance regarding political or social problems, it is good for ratings, but it transparently reveals the true attitude and contempt that these pundits and their corporate sponsors have toward their own society. The conservative pundit's reliance on cliched and acrimonious insults and assaults against their opponents are the weapons they use and abuse that instill the personal attack and abuse is okay factor to their blue-collar Republican audiences. Their attacks on gays, academic freedom, unless it's a conservative academic view, contraception, abortion, stem cell research, universal health care, and national debt, the anti-war movement, tax increases for the wealthy, of which they are, liberal family values, etc., constantly betray their masks of assumed intelligence they so vainly and arrogantly display to their admiring and ditto devoted fans. example of this attitude is displayed by Ann Coulter. Insults against the liberal community can be funny if read by a liberal. However, the average buyer of an Ann Coulter book is not a liberal. Most of her books are bought by her arch-conservative supporters, and her attitude and words are considered by many to be her loyal readers. Many of her loyal readers is a valid intellectual stance based upon the accurate fact. Other noted conservative intellectuals are Rush Limbaugh, Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, and Tucker Carlson. The absolute absurdity of so many of their statements and arguments leave any reasonably intelligent member of their audience totally aghast at their lack of an understanding of an issue, and convinced that these pundits are complete idiots, or they cannot believe a word they are saying. It is also common practice among the conservative magazines to use Michelle Malkin, Ann Coulter, Glenn Beck, and Sarah Palin books or other conservative authors' books as promotional tools and giveaways to subscribe to their magazines. A recent Newsmax promotion is offering three conservative authors' books for $3 for a subscription to the magazine. That's $3 for $1 per book. And the new Sarah Palin book was recently advertised by Newsmax magazine for $4.97 in an email advertisement to Newsmax readers. I receive them constantly. These severely discounted books are bought by the hundreds of thousands at marginal discounts by conservative magazines and promoters, which cause these conservative authors to be on bestseller lists. In other words, you wonder how people get on bestseller lists. These guys, all of a sudden, within weeks or months, they're on the New York Times bestseller list. Well, it's because those lists are based upon book sales, and those book sales can be fraudulently created. Whereas you get an individual with $1 million buys, 100,000 books, and then suddenly those books go to sky high. Because 100,000 books in the world sold is equal to a bestseller. Anybody creating that kind of a market where they can actually sell 100,000 books or more is a bestseller. Just the same way that the music industry decides that, selling 100,000 records is a gold record, and a platinum record is selling 1 million. I once mused at the idea of what I would do or say if I was paid millions of dollars a year to promote the Bush or neocon conservative agenda or defend Dick Cheney and CIA torture on my radio and television program. I wondered if I could keep a straight face the way conservative pundits do and be convincing. Could I promote death and destruction of a foreign people and the bankruptcy of my own country? Could I speak daily to my listeners to convince them that all is well with this country and say that all liberals are idiots and trying to screw America and destroy the country? I wondered if I could say that with a straight face, that the Bush administration was a Christian fellowship of God-fearing men and women serving the best interest of the American people. I don't believe I could do it, nor would I accept payment of millions of dollars to speak the propaganda of a left or a leftist agenda that I felt was not truthful. My beliefs and commitments have hindered me and may curse my future. However, my conscience is clear and my intentions are honorable. I will continue to speak the truth as I understand it, with the caveat that I am not infallible, but my views are not bought or sold. I attack the left, right, and middle as I see the truth to be. Perhaps I am the greatest fool. when I consider Dennis Miller's great sellout to the conservative establishment, after having made his career as an SNL liberal comic and cynical social critic, and now is Rupert Murdoch's lackey and waterboy to Geraldo Rivera and Bill O'Reilly, I believe I will maintain my integrity. Dennis Miller's new show, Amnesia, is quickly canceled by Fox. Fox is the perfect metaphor for Miller's political about-face, and accurately depicts what happened to his career. Mr. Miller has found out the Fox audience never watched SNL. Having a clue who Dennis Miller is, and can't understand any of his jokes, because Dennis Miller is smarter than a fifth grader. My truth may be as valid as the next guy's, but I can say that I make a concerted effort each week to bring forward the news and my comments as I see the issues. Right wing or left wing, mainstream or alternative news warrants mention. However, an obviously skewed and greatly edited version of reported events or statements of fact must be carefully scrutinized and rightly dealt with in a broadcast, either by a mention, a criticism, or by completely ignoring it as an irrelevant tripe if it is said to or printed to mislead and misdirect the intended audience. Cover-ups are constant events in governments and corporations, so are misleading statements made by them. I am inclined to believe that most, if all, not all pundits are themselves paid mouthpieces similar to attorneys. An attorney for a fee will represent even the most vile and despicable client and be prepared to lie and mislead a jury to protect his client. He is protected by the law and is a certified and oath-taking member of the system that demands his moral absence in the defense of his client, as is rewarded and is rewarded professionally by the system. This may be how conservative pundits rationalize their work to others, but it can't let them sleep any better. The concern I have over the troubling aspects of control by the elite conservative cabal is that they can manipulate the minds of millions of Americans so easily. It is as though this unaffected, immoral group of self-proclaimed Americans is made up of creatures from the night of the living dead. They prey on mindless souls and despise all intelligent people. They see the masses of the world as cattle to be herded and brought to slaughter. Ted Turner once used the term to describe those of us who are not billionaires as useless feeders. Men like Turner and Murdoch and others of their privilege laugh at all who view the world with moronic smiles and half-dead smirks of ignorant cynicism toward conspiracy and worship G.W. Bush as the second coming. It has been well reported that much of the news reported by the mainstream media is written by and supplied to news outlets directly by pharmaceutical companies, Pentagon, and corporate sponsors who want to sway the public. Many of the bills in Congress are written by lobbyists. Jay Leno had a great segment on the Tonight Show called Jaywalking. In a segment, he went to a college campus or a boardwalk in California and asked the guy or girl on the street questions on American history or current political events. Who was Thomas Jefferson, or who was Bill Clinton, or who was Hillary Clinton? The program, though I'm sure the program is edited for length best answers, it never ceases to amaze me how totally ignorant certain normal-looking people are. They don't have a clue or an interest in the current events or American history. Many cannot name the last two presidents of the United States. But if you ask who won American Idol or who P. Diddy is, they can tell you. And a national poll taken in 2006 asked 1,000 people if they knew any member of the W. Bush administration. 54% were polled did not, but the majority polled knew who Homer Simpson was. This is why less than 50% of all eligible voters actually vote whether they consider themselves liberals or conservatives. Based on the Nielsen ratings, most cable news programs receive far less than 1 million viewers nightly. All three network news reports together receive only 28 million viewers. This is approximately the number of viewers and voters in the audience for one night of American Idol. Cable or network news programs, audiences' average age is over 50. Several months before the 2004 presidential primaries, the recently deceased Bob Novak, then working for CNN on Crossfire, stated on one of the programs, "Less than 100,000 people in the world know the names of any of the Democratic presidential candidates, and most of the voters in the country won't pay attention to the presidential primaries until the New Hampshire primary." I never took Novak too seriously except when he made that statement. I believe his statement was true. I quizzed a few people I knew personally who I thought might know the names of all the candidates, and no one knew the names of more than 3 of the 10 candidates. I'm not bragging, but I knew all of their names and positions on the issues. Karl Rove and G.W. Bush knew full well that if they wanted to get any of their base support, which are the blue-collar Republicans, to go to the polls, they had to rouse them with either gay marriage or pro-life amendment issues. The Democrats figured that more candidates, the better, because they believed everyone hated Bush, and the Democrats would win no matter who won the primary. The problem with that idea was that the Bush cabal fixed the elections, and neither the Democrats or John Kerry had the courage or the commitment to challenge the account. I wrote an article on my website in 2005 about conservatives entitled "A Thought About Conservatives." It's printed in the Essays and Insights segment of this book. And with 10 minutes remaining, I'm going to leave it at that, I believe. I hope you enjoyed that. I got word, I believe the book will be out around the 15th or the 20th of next month. And I'll have posting it on the Blog Talk post page and my web page. I'm also on Facebook, and I'm under Leo Steele. You can check that out. I was so pleased. I was so surprised today that Governor Rell of Connecticut accepted my invitation of friendship, and she's a Facebook friend now. I'm promoting this book there, also the Blog Talk Radio Show, and all the other events that are coming up. Maybe this is a good time to talk about the social network system. I'm not really a big fan of them, other than for networking and so on. It's fun to kind of see have your friends talk and see them speaking.
Say
messages to you. But they're private messages, they're public messages, which I guess makes them interesting, even more so. But nothing of any relevance actually gets said, just more public speak, you know. And I kind of do the same thing. I challenge a lot of the statements on that side, and on my side, since they're on my side, I have to challenge them, I believe. But I'm always happy to have other people join me and engage in a discussion on that site. And I, again, that's under Leo Steele, under in the Facebook.com. But I can say that it's a distress. It's pretty much a distraction, you know, reading everything that's going on. I, like everything else, you know, you try to regulate your time, and don't spend so much time on, don't spend too much time engaged in superfluous conversation on Facebook, unless you have a purpose, which is to network, you know, and get people to know you. With that thought, I may wind up, I guess I'll be closing the show a little early tonight, unless there is somebody who wishes to talk. Unfortunately, I didn't go. I meant to go back here. I was involved. I don't have any callers. But if anybody would like to call tonight, please do. We leave the lines open for another 7 minutes. And maybe you'd like to discuss this book or discuss these issues that I bring up in this book. You agree with me that Jesus was a liberal? I definitely am convinced of it, and I think once reading this chapter or listening to this chapter, you might agree with me as well. There was nothing conservative about Jesus, nothing at all. He was a radical preacher, a radical religious reformer, and all the power to him. But nevertheless, Jesus was a man and with a great vision, and proved to the world that he too, or you too, or myself, or yourself, or everybody could be as he was, a radical, essentially. And also to note that a radical is somebody who is obsessed with, you know, the injustices of this world. Obsessed with that. Just why? Why does there have to be? And they persist and they persist and they persist. And, for instance, some of the abolitionists, you know, that were obsessed with the existence of slavery, what it did, and how society, the American society, just accepted it as part of being that a black person was a slave, not worthy of citizenship, not worthy of anything but a shed, and you know, maybe a straw mattress, a straw bed to lay on in a barn. I mean, that's what they were considered. And I'm so pleased that that's where our country has gone, has ascended to that higher level, to the extent that they elected a black president. That would have been impossible 50, 20, 25 years ago. 50 years ago, and but that's what a concerted effort toward unity consciousness, if you will, has done for us on this planet, and has mingled the races to the extent that cultures accept other cultures, religions are to, you know, replace others' religions, but we are a thriving species as a human being, and a remarkable intelligence that is guided by a great divine intelligence. And because of that, George Washington cited it in his first inauguration, that divine providence that created this country. And that's essentially what's going on. I didn't mean to curtail the conversation, but I was kind of getting a little offline. I think I'm going to end the program. We still have 4 minutes if anybody wants to call. If not, I want to wish you, everybody, a good evening. The book will be coming out in December, mid to later part of December, I've been told, possibly, around the 20th. There'll be an e-book as well as a soft cover book, and that'll be available on my site. It'll be available on Barnes & Noble, on Amazon, it'll be available at all your store outlets can order the book online and receive it. That's about it. I wanted to thank everybody for listening tonight, and look forward to talking to you tomorrow. Tomorrow night we have our guest George Dixon, and Lila will be joining us with our talk on we'll talk about the sixth night of the Mayan calendar, which is what we're into right now, and we'll be discussing the ramifications of that, what's going on, and how it's affecting the lives of everybody. On November 5th of this month, you had the mass shooting at Fort Worth. It just so happens that Guy Fawkes Day is the 5th, which is the day that Englishmen tried to blow up the Parliament building. And the movie V was centered around that this particular thing. And what can I say? The show is on, but not streaming. Why is that? Since I still have 1 minute remaining to the show. Not sure. But anyway, we will continue this next week, another reading from this book. But join us tomorrow when we have George Dixon joining us, and Lila will be with me tomorrow night. So I want to thank everybody for listening tonight, and have a pleasant evening.